96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is part one of a special two-part edition of the Daily Drum, D.C. Election 2014. Good evening, I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we hear individually from three candidates running for D.C. mayor. They are independent candidate Carol Schwartz, independent candidate and D.C. at-large councilmember David Catania, and Democratic candidate and D.C. Ward 4 councilmember Muriel Bowser. Also joining me, Washington Times columnist Deborah Simmons and Kevin Martin with Project 21. Lines are open. We will take some calls at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876. That's 855-288-4876. Ms. Schwartz, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it, as well as members of the panel. Let me go straight to this. Ms. Schwartz, you've run four times for mayor of the District of Columbia. The last time, 2002, you ran as a Republican. What's different about you now, if anything?
Well, I'm an independent. That's what's different. And I'm 12 years older than the last time I ran. But other than that, not much. I still have the energy and the compassion for people and the desire to serve the residents of the District of Columbia. I think you said I had a 30-second opening statement.
That's right. And forgive me, because I did forget it. I was looking at the clock. So please go ahead, and thank you for keeping me on point. What is your 30-second statement?
Well, listen, I hope that the voters of the District of Columbia will give me a chance. We've tried a lot of other people. It hasn't always worked out so well. Why not me? I think I have the depth and breadth of experience spanning four decades, two terms on the Board of Education, where real change for the better took place and our test scores went up, and four terms on the council with a break of 8 years in between. I get along well with people. I have the ability to move the city forward. We're going to take care of affordable housing. We're going to stop this disparity in our education. We're going to take care of our vulnerable populations, including our homeless, and do drug treatment on demand. We can make a big difference, and I hope the voters will look to me on November 4th to lead this city.
Deborah Simmons, your question.
Oh, yeah. My first one is involves education reform. What's the first thing the city needs to do? We're on an education reform track, but what's one of the first things the city needs to do in order to bolster what's been going on the past several years?
Well, I think we need to bring more resources into the schools, that especially where they're high-need children. Mm-hmm. And it's not just resources, even though I'm going to do extra resources where there's a big disparity in test scores between them and other children of the same age. And I want to do community schools with wraparound services. I want to bring a call to service for retired educators, not only in D.C., but throughout the region, and we're going to bus them in so that these children at a very early age have one-on-one tutoring happening so they don't get so far behind. Mm. And so I lay awake nights thinking about what I want to do, and I'm really excited about the things that I think will make a tremendous difference. It's not just money, it's people power. Mm. And it's loving, educated people power that look at all the retirees. It'll be wonderful for them to come in and touch the child's life, and it'll be wonderful for the child to be able to get that kind of tender, loving care.
Mm. Kevin. My question is on policing. We've seen with Ferguson in the news and a lot of police shootings. Ms. Schwartz, are you for what I call proactive policing and not reactive policing? And in D.C., we've gotten to what we call reactive policing, where police tend to show up in police cars, they show up in greater numbers at a crime scene. What about the days when we had police officers who lived in our community, who knew our senior citizens, who could solve a street crime at street go? I'm for that. Would we, under your administration, see a return to community policing, where police and community came together to solve problems and not like us versus them mentality like we're seeing with these protests out in Ferguson?
Yes. And listen, I was associated for 25 years. I was on the board of the Metropolitan Police Boys and Girls Clubs. And that was before it got taken over after I left. And I was the first woman president in their 62-year history. And they that was a wonderful program because young kids at an early age got to know police mm-hmm. officers that worked right in the police boys and girls clubs themselves. That was a beautiful thing. The officer-friendly program that yes. used to be, that was a beautiful thing. And then I'm also calling for us going up to 4,000, our authorized number of police officers, but I'm calling on let's get people from D.C., get a cadet program going for in our high schools so that as young people are looking at what career they want to choose, our homegrown D.C. people, and certainly I want the police force to look more like our citizenry. Mm-hmm. And so I think this would be a good way to have, starting from little children with things like the officer-friendly, the police boys and girls clubs, restarting those kinds of things. And then the third one would be getting young people at an early age looking towards the police department as their career.
Ms. Schwartz.
And giving preference to those who live in the city.
Here's a question regarding the economy and jobs in D.C. The city has become a bit of a have and have nots city. How would you address that?
Well, listen, I've gotten very concerned. One of the reasons I'm running, if you all recall, I haven't been on the council in 5.5 years. I got beaten in 2008 because I gave sick leave to workers. I'm a very bad person for having done that. I'm a very proud bad person from having done that. So bring me back and I'll do more bad, proud things. But anyway, I haven't been there in the 5.5 years, but I have watched from the sidelines and I have gotten very disturbed at what I see. I mean, with our boomtown, it's something groundwork I help lay with better taxes and better business kinds of encouragements. But then all of a sudden the boomtown comes and now we have, you know, affordable housing prices. What's been done in that 5.5 years as this boom has happened to do affordable housing?
But if practically I may ask nothing. You, because I'm really low on
and
time.
And then our diversity is diminishing. The beautiful, glorious diversity that has made this city special is diminishing. And it's one of the reasons why I'm out there. Listen,
so how
Harold,
would
if
you
I,
address that?
Affordable housing, number one, and real affordable housing and not just the 80 percentile, but the 30 percentile and below. A lot of
what's the 30 percentile?
Well, that speaks to those that are, you know, median income, 30% of the median income. So we always talk about affordable housing for 80%. Those people make pretty much money. It's the 30 percentile that are being, you know, priced out. And I think we have to do so much in the area of affordable housing. I mean, we have one member who's running now who's chaired the committee on economic development that has affordable housing for the last couple of years. Where is the affordable housing initiatives?
So you think that affordable housing is the key, but what about, for example, jobs, as we've heard, east of the river?
The War 7
oh, no,
and 8.
Oh, no, disparities there. We're going to take care of that. Of course, we're going to, you know, their 18% unemployment rate is abominable, and we've got to do something about that. So it's affordable housing, it's job training, it's making sure that people that need jobs can have jobs. It's giving preference to D.C. residents for government jobs and contractors to actually mean what they say when they get contracts. We're going to hire D.C. people and then they come up short. We're going to fine them so much that it'll be cheaper to hire our people than to pay the fines we're going to give them.
Hold on for a second because I know there are some people that want to put in a phone call and we're running out of time. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Short question, Kevin, please.
You know, I'm one of those contractors over in Ward 8. One of the problems that we see is the city brings in these outside contractors. They bring in these outside residents. They slap their name up on side of the side of the building. And people in Ward 7 and Ward 8 are like, okay, there's another economic.
How about me, Lord, is what they're saying.
Yeah,
and they're rightly saying it. and we're going to take care of our own people. I'm tired of taking care of everybody else, and we're going to take care of our own people. And I have a history of having done that, not only in my elected life, but in my private life. I have served on boards and worked very hard as a community volunteer for years in this city. I'm not out doing another job making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. I gave my service in D.C. full-time, and the few hours I had off from my job, I was out working in the community in a volunteer capacity trying to make lives better.
Okay. Can we go to the phones? Let's go to the phones. Okay, no, not yet. Okay, fine.
So I can get the question in?
Yeah, please, go ahead, real quick.
When you mentioned the high unemployment rate east of the river, and it's an ornery one. It's barely budged. So here's the question. How do you get those small businesses, such as Kevin, better connected with the unemployed and the underemployed in Ward 7?
Well, listen, I think we have to do a lot. I'm over there a tremendous amount across the river, and I have been in my personal life, my public life, and in my volunteer life. So I know that community well. And I go down over there in my convertible with the top down by myself. And everybody seems to know me, and they all yell, "Hey, Carol." So I think that'll be a nice start to start making the kinds of associations you need to. We also know that a lot of those individuals need drug treatment or alcohol treatment, and I'll work, do that on demand. I've been wanting to do it for years, and we can do it. And we have the money now to do it. We don't have excuses to do it. Oh, we don't can't afford it. We can't afford to do it. We can't afford not to do it is what's going on here. And then we
Ms. Schwartz, I hate to interrupt you, but there's our stinger, and we are tight on time. I'd like to thank you for coming in. Good luck to you on November 4th. Thank you so much. We're going to move on. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking to D.C. mayoral candidates for 2014.
Walmart knows how hard...
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. We continue with part one of our special two-part edition of The Daily Drum, D.C. Election 2014. Of course, I'm Harold Fisher. Joining me now, independent candidate and D.C. at-large council member David Catania. Of course, we continue with Washington Times columnist Deborah Simmons and Kevin Martin with Project 21. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Mr. Catania, thank you so much for joining us. 30 seconds, opening statement, please.
Look, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to your listeners. Look, for the last 17 years, I've been really privileged to have gotten up every day and done a job that I love, where I run towards the city's challenges and candidly not away from them. And I'm running on a record of accomplishment during my 17 years on the council. I've been the champion of such things as marriage equality and smoke-free D.C. and medical marijuana. I'm proud of the fact that during my chairmanship of the Health Committee, we cut our rates of uninsured in half to the second lowest rate in the country. We cut our rate of new infections in HIV in half, our deaths by 69%. And to be honest, this year we started school with the largest investment in our city's history in at-risk youth, which I authored the Fair Funding Bill, nearly $80 million. Mm. So I'm running on a record of accomplishments and delivering for people.
Mm. First question. If you won, you would be the first white mayor, the first openly gay mayor in the city's history. Obviously, this is something the media has paid a lot of attention to. But have you paid a lot of attention to it? And how much do you think this would affect or has affected your candidacy?
I don't think, while race is obviously very important, I don't think my skin color is any more important than the color of my eyes when it comes to, getting up every day and working on behalf of residents of the city. And so this comes down to record. How have I spent the last 17 years of my life? I spent the last 17 years making sure that 30,000 more people have health insurance that didn't before I started, saving the city's public hospital on Southern Avenue. Now, we can talk about race, and that's important. You got to put stuff in front of you before you put it behind you. But if you're talking about who gets up every day and delivers for the people of the city who need it the most, where opportunity has left them behind, you look at the record. There are 37,000 kids going back to school this year. year with at-risk weights, 30,000 people with health insurance, a hospital that serves a quarter of our residents. And let me be honest with you, what I found, and some of my opponents in this race are taking, you know, shots of the work we did at United Medical Center. I found a hospital that was borrowing pharmaceuticals from neighboring hospitals where nurses walked off the job because they weren't being paid and where the radiology department had been burned out. I didn't find that acceptable, and I helped organize a $100 million response. Others, you know, may poke fun, say they can do better, but they didn't have ideas.
Okay.
I wanted to ask, the Constitution doesn't say anything about the federal government and health care. We've got an Ebola crisis staring us down right now. What, as a mayor running the executive branch, which would hold a lot of authority and power, what would you do right now to help arrest the development of Ebola in the United States?
Well, in the District of Columbia, that's my primary concern.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really proud of the fact that when I was chairman of the House, the Health Committee, one of the things we did was invest very heavily in our bioterrorism lab in Southwest. We created an electronic medical records system. We invested in bioterrorism and terror and infectious disease infrastructure with the with our partnership of the Nash of the DC Hospital Association. You know, we have been caught flat-footed with respect to this epidemic, where no one is in charge and yet everyone is responsible. And so, you know, some of the infrastructure that we have put in place, some of the evidence-based infrastructure we have put in place while I was chairman of the Committee on Health, I think has gone a long way.
And what's the electronic... I'm sorry.
No, I want to make sure that Kevin has a chance. Okay. Go ahead. Please, Kevin.
Yes, the people of Ward 7 and Ward 8 are my main concern as a businessman. I hire within Ward 8 myself. But one of the things we do tend to find is that when those opportunities present themselves east of the river, then those people are not hired, they're not brought in, and they're the last to receive the economic trickle-down effect. How would you change that, Councilmember?
That's a great question. It's one, you know, when Deborah and I were last together at the opening of Friendship Tech on Martin Luther King, I read some pretty startling statistics. The residents in Ward 8 have an average household income of $25,000. In Ward 3, it's $204,000. There's 17.5% unemployment in Ward 8. There's 2.5% in Ward 3. And there's 83% of the people in Ward 3 have a bachelor's degree and 12% in Ward 8. The way in which we approve improve the economic inequality and in order to make opportunity, you know, a realistic possibility for our residents in Ward 8 is by improving the public education system, making it possible for people to have to go and receive career and technical education and go to college. We've had 40 years and more of the same of bankrupt ideas. And I got to be honest with you, the lives of people in Ward 8 are no better off today than they were in 1974 when we started home rule. The income inequality is just as wide. The lack of opportunity is just as great. The way we're going to fix schools in Ward 8, exactly what I've been doing for the last 21 months as chairman of the Committee on Education. I've met with the school leaders from nearly every single school in that ward and had in-depth conversations about what it's going to take to set children up to succeed in that ward and what have we done in the last year and a half. We've ended social promotion, which caused cascading failure as kids were promoted because the law said so, not because they were ready to learn. We added the largest investment in the history of our city in at-risk funding. There's more than $9 million going to Ward 8 in DCPS alone to add additional resources to address the social-emotional issues and the things that are keeping kids from learning. And just last week, we moved the most historic measures regarding special education in the history of home rule. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make it possible for kids to learn, give the kids the resources they need, and have the standards necessary so that kids can come out of high school ready to learn, ready to go to college, ready to go to career and technical education.
I need to go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Israel calling from Washington, D.C. Go right ahead quickly. What's your question?
My question is just that, what, if any, is his plan to ensure that we do have affordable housing in Washington, D.C.? That's mainly what I'm really concerned about right now.
Thank you so much for your question.
And Israel, that's a great question. It's been on the minds of a lot of us. We actually don't have an affordable housing strategy in the city, and it is broken on so many levels. We don't use all the available federal resources that are at our disposal. You know, I was last Tuesday, a week ago, I was touring Lincoln Heights. And Lincoln Heights is a perfect example of the failure of housing, especially for those who require permanent assistance. It's a 440-unit building. We mothballed mothballed 40 units about a decade ago for new communities. Promise made, promise broken, broken, broken.
But
there's more.
Okay, but we know the history. But what would you do as mayor?
For starters, I would ask why there are 40 units that are habitable, not the 40 they've mothballed, 40 habitable vacant units. Why the Housing Authority feels it necessary to use 6 for office space, et cetera. Look, we have 8,000 units of affordable
office
housing
space.
In the city. Oh, my
office
God.
Space.
Look, we have 8,000 units of affordable housing right now in our public housing infrastructure. Easily 10% is not online. Why aren't we spending our resources to get those units online? We're trying to worry about where we're going to put people for hypothermia season. And we have, just in that one development alone, I walked them myself, 40 available units. These are 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. So we need this government to get it together when it comes to housing. It means a plan. It means using our resources. It means what we have. It means annual accountability plans. Look, when I tackled the HIV/AIDS epidemic in 2005, when it was the front page of the Washington Post, we were compared to a third world country. I didn't simply point fingers. I had weekly hearings until we eliminated wait lists for people who needed drugs. We improved the infrastructure. We increased testing. And we reduced deaths by 69%. We need the same kind of Manhattan plan when it comes to housing. And we don't have it.
Deborah, quick question.
Yeah, Mrs. Schwartz, when she was on a few minutes ago, said that she supports on-demand drug testing. I thought you introduced that legislation a while back.
That's right. In fact, what we did in 1999, what's called the Choice in Drug Treatment Act, became the foundation for SAMHSA's nationwide a drug protocol, and that is give people the choice of where they want to go for drug treatment. And so rather than say, you'll go here, you'll go there, allow the consumer, when they make that choice to get treatment, to go to the place that best meets their needs. It might mean some transitional housing. It might mean co-occurring illnesses, et cetera, et cetera. What we haven't done is we've not invested nearly enough in our substance abuse infrastructure. That is one of the big gaps. Now, one of the nice things about the Affordable Care Act and the expansion of Medicaid, it means that more people will have access to substance abuse treatment, and they can take those dollars and they can go to where they choose. But for the publicly
Betty
funded,
Ford Clinic or any other expensive
clinic? Well, it's going to be, what their insurance will provide for.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
And so, look, but to your point, Debbie, that's a very serious issue. I mean, when we're looking at 8,000 returning citizens every year, and a good portion of them haven't had the mental health services or the substance abuse services or job training or housing services, we're setting them up to fail. Substance abuse is a long, it's been a long issue in our city, and we've yet to take it as seriously as we should with the resources that it requires.
That we have, yeah.
Right. Mr. Catania, I'm running low on time. I want to let you get your 30-second end statement, and why should people vote for you?
Well, look, I think this is an election about who has the experience, the values, and the vision to secure our future. When you look at a record, I've tackled some of the most important challenges in our city, and I'm not afraid to run towards the challenges while others run away. Trying to save, for instance, United Medical Center in the middle of the Great Recession when General Motors was going bankrupt wasn't easy. Expanding insurance by the equivalent of a half a city ward, making sure we had the lowest rate of uninsured children in the country, et cetera. I'm running for mayor because we have to do better than 63% of our kids graduating on time. We have to do better than a housing strategy that is Darwinian. And we have to be thinking about how we're going to secure our future by growing this economy beyond, legal services and government, but how we're going to grow in hospitality and education and healthcare and the new economy companies. I'm running for mayor because I want to secure our future, not for the next 15 minutes, but for the next 50 years.
Okay, David Catania, thank you so much.
Thanks.
We appreciate your time.